We are recording and broadcasting. Madam Chair, the floor is yours.
Good morning. Welcome to the San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Board. Today is February the 9th, our regularly scheduled meeting at 9 a.m. And will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Barbanel?
Here.
Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Ms. Blair?
Here.
Dr. Olson?
Here.
Mr. Strawn? Is he here yet? No. Okay. And Chair Cantu?
Here. We have a quorum. Roger Mitchell, will you please explain the terms of the Zoom public meeting? Roger, you're on mute.
Well, good morning. We got that out of the way. Good morning. My name is Roger Mitchell. I am a supervising engineering geologist with the San Diego Water Board. Today, I'm serving as the remote meeting coordinator and would like to share some instructions on how to participate in today's virtual board meeting. If you wish to make a verbal comment during the public forum or during one of the board agenda items, you must be signed into Zoom webinar or be participating by phone. If you're currently watching the webcast on calspan.org, and you want to comment on an agenda item, you will need to register to sign into the Zoom webinar or call into the meeting. Information on how to participate can be found on the San Diego Water Board's meeting agenda website. Public comments will be accepted for each item after all presentations for the item are complete. If you wish to speak on an item, please virtually raise your hand. If you're using a computer or tablet, please use the raise hand button in Zoom. If you're calling into Zoom, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Please use the raise hand feature to let the board know you wish to speak, even if you previously registered and indicated that you wish to speak on an item. If you do not raise your hand, we will assume you no longer wish to speak. When public comment starts on an item, the commenter order will be determined by the order each person raised their hand. I will call on each commenter by name, or if you are on the phone, I will call the last three digits of your phone number. And then I will unmute each person when it is their turn to speak. Please note, you will not appear by video during your testimony. There is a 3-minute time limit for each public commenter. However, that time could be extended at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen for those calling in by phone. We will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. I would like to remind everyone participating in the board meeting today to state your name for the record before you speak, and please mute your microphone if you are not speaking. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text to area code 805-801-3576 or email it@agpvideo.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. And I hope all of you didn't experience any difficulties. We see you here, so that's good. But we understand there has been some difficulties in logging in, and we may have a board member who is struggling with doing that right now. At this point, we'll announce the public forum. Any member of the public may address and ask questions of the board relating to any matter within our jurisdiction, provided the matter is not on the agenda or pending before the San Diego Water Board. Do we have anybody for public forum?
We do, Chair. Wayne Rosenbaum.
Mr. Rosenbaum, welcome.
Good morning, Chair Cantu and board members. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Building Industry Association of San Diego and the Industrial Environmental Association. At the December board meeting of the Regional Board, the Regional Board approved the 2021 Triennial Basin Plan Work Plan. During the approval discussion of this item, members Warren and Abernall asked the staff to provide the board with a list of basin planning aspirational goals that were not incorporated into the work plan due to funding limitations. One of those goals is a review of the water quality objectives in the basin plan that were established in the 1970s, but may no longer be appropriate due to advances in water quality science and technology. We understand that this issue will be further discussed as part of Agenda Item 8, Board Member Requests. However, we further understand that public comment is not generally accepted on that item. During IEA's February Water Committee meeting, The issue of adequate funding to review the additional items as part of the triennial review was discussed with Dave Gibson. Dave indicated that it would be possible to increase the scope of the triennial review if an appropriate scope of work could be developed and funding could be identified. Dave further indicated that the likely cost to fund the review would be in the range of $175,000. Dave's comments were reported to the BIA Water Committee at its February meeting. BIA is in the process of reaching out to various elected officials to seek additional funding for the regional board to support this effort. We are hopeful that with the support of the regional board, additional public and private funding can be identified to turn this aspirational goal into a reality. We will continue to work with your staff to keep this board apprised of our progress. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenblum, and for your support. I mean, it's well established that all of the water boards are underfunded to accomplish everything that we need to accomplish. We appreciate all support from all quarters. Thank you. Any other public forum members wishing to address the board?
I do not see any board, Chair Cantu.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mitchell. Our first order of business is considering the adoption of the board meeting minutes for January 10th, 12th, and 13th. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes? Ms. Olson, Dr. Olson, you have your hand up.
I'll move approval.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you very much. Are there any further discussion, amendments, or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Try this again. Mr. Barbanel?
Aye.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Aye.
Dr. Olson? Aye. Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
And Chair Cantu?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Do we have a report from our from the State Water Board today?
Chair Cantu?
Yes. Oh, hi. There you are. Welcome, Board Member Morgan from the State Water Resources Control Board.
Chair Cantu? Do the December meeting minutes as well, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I skip over that? Oh, December the 8th. I'm sorry. I should have taken those together. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of December the 8th?
I'm of approval.
Thank you, Dr. Olson. Second.
I'll second it, Gary.
Thank you, Gary Strom. Any discussion? Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Mr. Barbanel?
Aye.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
And Chair Cantu?
Aye.
Perfect.
Okay. State Water Resources Control Board member Nicole Morgan. Morgan, welcome very much. We're happy to see you today.
Morning. Happy to see you all too. So I'm happy to be here this morning and provide you all with a liaison report. Let's see here. So statewide residential water use for December was 65 GCPD, in line with many recent wet Decembers. We saw a 16.2% statewide savings for December. This was relative to 2020. This is a cumulative savings of 7.4%. And so we are progressing in the right direction there. So the Safer 2022 Drinking Water Needs Assessment, on February 2nd, staff hosted a public webinar. The state board staff proposed changes to indicators used in the risk and affordability assessment for public water systems. Expansion of the list of water systems included in the risk assessment and a new combined methodology for the risk assessment for state small water systems and domestic wells. Staff provided an overview of a cost estimate for SB 552 requirements, drought planning for small water suppliers in rural communities. The proposed water loss performance standard regulation currently being considered by the state board is designed to bring water losses to levels that are cost-effective and feasible for each urban retail water supplier. Staff will host a public hearing to provide a detailed overview of the proposed regulation, overall framework, timeline, and proposed requirements on February 10. The comment period ends on February 11. The state board is expected to consider adoption of the final regulation in the second quarter of 2022. The Division of Drinking Water staff are working on the reissuance of the sanitary sewer system waste discharge requirements. This general order requires public agencies to report sewer spills, develop a sewer system management plan, and conduct internal sewer program audits. The regional boards enforce the general order with the assistance from the State Board's Office of Enforcement. On February 23rd and 24th, staff will host a workshop to provide further information regarding the proposed general order reissuance. An additional board workshop will be held to receive public comments on March 15th. The public comment period ends on April 8th. The drinking water arrears program has closed. The payment status of applications as of January 8th is posted on the State Board's website. A total of 688 applications were submitted, totaling a little over $302 million in funding requested for approximately 534,500 accounts in arrears. At its January 19th board meeting, the State Board adopted the proposed amendments to its wastewater arrears guidelines. Staff published the program fact sheets for wastewater agencies and customers on the State Board website. Wastewater treatment providers that accrued residential and or commercial customer arrearages during the COVID-19 pandemic relief period, which is March 4th, 2020 through June 15th, 2021, can apply. State Board staff have been working closely with the regional boards on this program and greatly appreciate the regional board's assistance and collaboration. So that concludes my report for this month. I will pause, see if there's any questions, and if there's not, now, please, as always, please feel free to reach out.
Thank you, Board Member Morgan. Any questions for our State Board Member Representative? Dr. Olson.
Hi, Nicole. I just had a question about water losses. So water losses vary tremendously, particularly in older cities versus newer cities, and how well maintained the systems are. So can you give us the state's viewpoint on, I know federal money is becoming available for some of these older cities' issues. And is California getting any of that money, and will it be applied to help reduce water leaks? Or perhaps, and I may have missed something in the governor's budget, I apologize.
And so, yes. And so let's see here. I do have some notes on just kind of what we are looking at here. And I'm trying to pull those up to give you an idea of what we're looking at.
Take your time.
So give me a second here.
While she's looking, I have a general question for Dave. Can SRF funds for wastewater collection system be used for wastewater collection system in terms of addressing leakage, or for drinking water collection distribution systems in terms of leakages?
Good morning, Chair Cantu and members of the board. I believe that it can be proposed, but I don't believe that it's one of the higher priorities that the State Board has assigned to the State Revolving Fund. There is right now perhaps more funding than there has been available in previous years, so there may be a reconsideration in process that I'm not aware of. But right now, the priorities remain on expanding wastewater treatment systems in areas that are currently provided only with on-site treatment system and recycled water purveyance and drought resilience. We are hoping to see some expansion into the areas of stormwater capture and treatment, and the City of San Diego recently has been able to receive funds from that program accordingly. But I do not know if they're able to get funds for exfiltration from drinking water lines or sewer lines at this time.
Thank you. I know for the state SRF, State Revolving Fund, We have an unprecedented amount of money from the federal government. I think normally we have like $1 billion for 5 years. And I think we have at least five times that amount, just a tremendous increase. So this is an opportunity. Board Member Morgan, are you still researching or do you have something to report out?
Yeah, it's kind of a small detail. So I would like to offer our liaison member, if she can't lay her hands on it, she can just dot me an email. I greatly appreciate it. It's kind of a minor point.
Yeah. And so I did just pull it up here. Apologize for that.
That's okay.
Here. And so there's a couple of things. I completely agree with Mr. Gibson's comments regarding kind of the priorities. And with just the additional funding that is coming in, there are conversations to look at water loss and, conveyance, whether we're looking at wastewater conveyances, systems, collection systems, or we're looking at drinking water systems and looking at those losses. And how can we apply, the funding? Because we do have more now than we have in previous years. And so, usually the priority is looking for health and then also impacts to the environment. And so if we're looking at the 2021 Budget Act, there were, it set aside billions of dollars for natural resource packages. And so there was, let's see here, $5.2 billion for immediate drought response and long-term water resilience. And so that included drinking water, wastewater, water supply reliability, including recycled water, groundwater cleanup, flood management, the usual things that we see. But, note in there, it is for long-term resilience also.
Okay.
And so then if we look forward, the drought package also included $1.3 billion in American Rescue Plan Act funds for drinking water and wastewater infrastructure. And now if we look forward to the, I don't want to scroll past here, the federal funding, we're looking at, we're excited that California has a strong federal partner and investments made possible to this year's historic $1.2 trillion bipartisan Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act that bring an estimated $3.54 billion over 5 years through the state revolving funds. Now, this includes approximately $810.9 million for the Clean Water SRF, $69.27 million through the Clean Water SRF for emerging contaminants, a little over $1 billion for the Drinking Water SRF, a little over $346.5 million through the Drinking Water SRF for PFAS, and almost $1.3 billion for lead and service line replacements. So with those additional investments, there's a lot of opportunity to, look at these additional needs within our state.
Well, that sounds very promising.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions for Board Member Morgan? If not, thank you. We've missed you because of our schedule of meetings, and happy to see you again. At this point, we'll invite board members to share any reports. We didn't do this last month because of the nature of the hearing. So you can think about reporting on 2 months if you would like. While you're thinking, or maybe we don't have any much, I'd like to report on AB 170. AB 170 is a piece of legislation that passed that allocated $20 million to be spent on the border, either in United States or in Mexico, on water quality issues. So it was originally eligible for the Tijuana River watershed and also the New River, which, of course, I'd like to note is not a river, but we call it that, that crosses in Mexicali to Calexico in the Imperial Valley and ends up in the Salton Sea. One of the most important attributes of this money is the need for collaboration. The money is really secondary to the idea of establishing an ongoing, enduring, collaborative dialogue between California and Baja California Norte. So in the preliminary invitation, it was determined that the San Diego Regional Board's work on the Tijuana River watershed was the most robust ongoing collaborative process. And so the money was decided to be targeted to that area. So that process has continued. It's going to kick off with a meeting in Sacramento on March the 2nd, where we and members of the California State Administration and Baja California State Administration and water experts will be invited to discuss the terms of the situation and how we can develop this collaborative ongoing dialogue that can help us to better address water quality issues on both sides of the border. Again, one of the more interesting things about this fund, which I can't say is unprecedented, but it's unusual, is that the monies can be spent on either the United States side or the Mexican side. If they're being spent on the Mexican side, they will probably be spent through one of the mechanisms that have been used traditionally that allow for the easy administration of those funds. So we're really excited about this. $20 million is not a tremendous amount of money, but it's kind of the incentive to get people to the table and to start that dialogue, which I have a tremendous amount of faith in. And I know there's enthusiasm on both sides of the border to start that dialogue. And so I wanted to report that. Executive Officer Gibson, if you have anything to add, did I miss anything there?
No, Chair Cantu, I don't believe you did. I will simply add that I have been meeting and coordinating with US EPA and Cal EPA staff on this as well in support of your efforts and really appreciate that.
I've heard very positive reports back on how well Executive Officer Gibson's presentation has been, and all of the foundational work that he and his staff has accomplished up to this date is very much appreciated in Sacramento. So once we get past all the accolades, then we start getting down to business. So I'm very proud of that. Thank you very much, Dave Gibson.
Thank you.
Any other board member reports before we move on to the executive officer's report? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. We have received via mail the executive officer's report. Mr. Gibson, do you have anything to add to that report?
I'll begin by asking if there are any questions on the report, the written report you received. I have just a couple of things to add. First of all, welcome to what may very well be your last Zoom board meeting. We are planning for an in-person meeting on March 9th, 2022 in Orange County in Mission Viejo. It's been 2 years since we have had an in-person meeting. That was also an away meeting, as it were, in Temecula. I do hope that you will exercise some forbearance with myself and staff as we stumble to pull everything back together again and get back out on the road with all of you. But we are looking forward to meeting in person in Mission Viejo next month and hopefully continuing to meet thereafter in person in preference to Zoom. I'd like to ask the board to join me today in welcoming three new staff to our office. Kaylin Smith, Water Resource Control Engineer, Aaron Schmidt, Engineering Geologist, and George Getz, Environmental Scientist. I believe they are here with us today. Can we see you on camera and say hello to you this morning? I see Aaron, Kaylin, and George. Welcome to our team.
Welcome.
We have been fortunate to be able to recruit these people to help fill vacancies created by retirements and promotions, and as well as staff realignments. So we're very glad to have them on board, and they are all three in critical areas in our office right now. So get back to work, you three, please.
Thank you for joining us. We wish you the very best.
Yeah. We have been experiencing or seeing some significant flows across the border down at Stewart Strain and in the Tijuana River. I just wanted to report that we have been in communication with and working closely with IBWC and really appreciate the transparency in their investigative efforts led by the commissioner herself and the area field operations manager, Morgan Rogers. It is a difficult issue to try to identify exactly where the problems are, but we are confident that they're taking the steps necessary to work with agencies in Mexico to diagnose and then hopefully correct these problems in the very near term. In the meantime, the Tijuana River is flowing because PBCLA, the river diversion plant, is only being operated at partial capacity, because when they've operated at full capacity, the flows and Stewart strain simply increase. And so until we can find out where the blockage or breakage is in the international collector or perhaps in the headworks of the treatment plant, they're only operating that at partial capacity. But again, we have been working with them and other local agencies to support them and appreciate the transparent efforts that the commissioner has applied to this. And we'll report to you as this matter goes on. I also just wanted to share with you that I spoke this last month at the WaterTech conference on stormwater capture and harvest, presentation to about 100 stormwater and consulting professionals on the subject. I praised the San Diego Airport Authority for some very innovative work. They have the aspirational goal of becoming a zero discharge airport. All of the tarmac, all of the rooftops, all of the parking structures may be captured for stormwater and treated. Right now, the West Terminal parking lot is entirely captured and treated for reuse on site. Several of you toured that facility with me a couple of years ago in happier times. So that project is an example of what can be accomplished by agencies willing to engage in the opportunities that the municipal stormwater permit provides and the incentives as well. They have the added benefit of not having to worry about the copper concentrations and discharges to San Diego Bay. So I spoke to the nexus between water quality as well as the opportunity to develop somewhat drought resilient water infrastructure. Those comments were fairly well received, and I have follow-up meetings with consultants and others from other parts of the state, including San Francisco, where they have a zero discharge park under construction. Unless there are any questions on my report this month, that concludes my report.
Do we have any questions for our executive officer? Hearing none, we'll move on to an action item. This is a MPDS permit reissuance for residual firework pollution waste discharges to waters of the United States in the San Diego region for the public display of fireworks. So this is an annual event where we are interested in perchlorate and other residual elements that fall to our waters, and we have a permit. So do we have a report here?
Chair Cantu, did you want to do the consent calendar item number 3?
Oh, before my heavens, I'm really going out of business here, aren't I?
I apologize. We should have given you an annotated
agenda. Yes, we do want to do that. Absolutely. I'm moving too quickly here. This is a consent item, an item that we've had before, very similar, rescission of order number 88-24, waste discharge requirement for Indian Oaks Trailer Ranch, Riverside County, tentative order regional board 2022-0008. Mr. Bushnell, do we want to have a report on this? This is a rescission that's going to be covered by the state board general permit from here on out. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair Cantu, staff did not prepare a report, a formal presentation on this item, since it is a standard rescission action that the board has taken several times now over the course of several years. If the board does have any questions, Brandon Bushnell, as my staff, is here and available for questions. So at this time, I'll turn it back to you and the other board members.
Are there any questions? I hear none. So we will entertain a motion to adopt the rescission and with the understanding this will be covered under the state's general permit from here on out as we are moving all of these small discharge reports requirements to the state. Is there a motion?
This is Gary Strawn. I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Strawn.
I'll second Betty Olson.
Thank you, Dr. Olson. Any discussion, questions? Hearing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Barbanel?
Aye.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
And Chair Cantu?
Aye. Now, let's move to fireworks. I think this item has already been introduced. Do we have a staff report on this? Ms. Fawn?
Yes, I'll be presenting on it. Let me just share my screen.
Thank you.
Can everyone see my presentation?
We do.
Do I need to take an oath or anything? Sorry, this is also my first board meeting.
Welcome. We're glad to see you. I don't believe you need to take an oath.
Okay, I'll just get started with the presentation. Good morning, everyone. My name is Debbie Fan, and I'm in the Source Control Regulation Unit. With me today are Water Board staff David Barker, Brandy Atwin-Beals, and Keith Yeager. Today, I will be presenting on item 4, which will cover the reissuance of the general NPDES permit for public firework displays. With this, I would like to enter the agenda package for item 4 into the record. For this presentation, I'll be explaining what this permit covers, who it will affect, the water quality impacts, and what the existing order already does. After that, I'll talk about the changes that were made for this reissuance, and we'll go over the most significant comments that were received during the public comment period. At the end, I'll answer questions with the help of my colleagues. There are firework shows held throughout the San Diego region, and this general NPDES permit regulates the pollutant discharges from those shows. Fireworks are a class of low explosive pyrotechnic devices that are designed to produce colorful flames and sparks, but unfortunately, they weren't exactly designed to eliminate the debris that is produced. When a firework is set off, the parts that make up the firework also burn, producing residual firework pollutants that can fall into surface water, including paper, wire, cardboard, various chemicals, and any other material that may not have combusted properly. Once these materials enter a water body, they are considered a discharge of a pollutant from a port source within the meaning of the Clean Water Act, hence the need for an NPDES permit. This general NPDES permit affects firework displays that will take place along the coast or over any other water body within the San Diego region, which includes most of San Diego County and portions of South Orange County and Riverside County. Those who are planning to host firework shows where the public or a private group is invited are required to obtain coverage under this permit at least 60 days prior to the event, unless there's a given exception. The permit allows people to lawfully host firework shows over surface waters while being in accordance with federal and state water pollution laws. At the moment, there are 27 entities that are enrolled under the existing order, with SeaWorld hosting the most shows and the Armed Services YMCA hosting the largest events for Big Bay Boom. As you can all probably guess, events are most commonly held during New Year's Eve and of course, 4th of July. As mentioned earlier, fireworks produce debris such as paper, cardboard, wire, and fuses when they are set off. In addition to the debris, the detonation of fireworks also results in the discharge of various chemical constituents that can adversely affect water quality, including copper, barium, strontium, and titanium that are used to give fireworks their signature colors. Although these pollutants are not likely to permanently degrade water quality, this permit is necessary to enact measures that protect existing beneficial uses and to minimize the effects of residual firework pollutants. On that note, existing order number R9-2011-0022 was drafted and adopted and has been in effect. This existing order focuses on cleanup and abatement and requires all enrollees to prepare and implement a fireworks best management practices plan. The FBMPP requires all enrollees to consider measures to prevent and or reduce firework pollutants. Some of the more notable measures include requiring that all debris and unignited materials are cleaned within 24 hours to the extent possible, and that all waste must be disposed of according to applicable hazardous waste laws. This places the cleanup responsibility on the discharger. In addition, permit enrollees are required to complete a post-firework event form that contains information on the event and the BMPs implemented, including reporting the amount of debris collected from the firing range and adjacent water bodies. Lastly, the existing order classifies enrollees as either Category 1 or Category 2. Category 1 dischargers are required to conduct receiving water and sediment monitoring to assess compliance with receiving water limitations, While Category 2 dischargers are subject to these monitoring requirements on a case-by-case basis. Because SeaWorld used to host fireworks shows nearly every night during the summer months, they were classified as a Category 1 discharger. In recent years, they have since reduced the number of shows. With the information gathered from the existing order, a few changes were made when drafting the tentative order. First off, the tentative order now includes new standard language, including updated language regarding applicable total maximum daily loads and discharge prohibition. Consistent with the existing order, the tentative order still requires a firework best management practices plan, which continues to act as the backbone of the permit. The tentative order, however, proposes additional measures, such as removing plastic and aluminum from the fireworks when feasible, and ensuring that the events do not occur near a TMDL site that is impaired for any firework constituent. One of the most significant changes is that the tentative order required discharges to areas of special biological significance to minimize the use of aerial salute shells or devices in order to minimize the noise and flash impacts on sensitive surrounding wildlife. The tentative order also streamlines the reporting process and provides standards form for the visual monitoring report, post-firework display log, and display of fireworks post-event report, all of which are required in the annual report and will be submitted through CWIX, our online reporting system. Lastly, the tentative order proposes removing the discharger categories and retains the need for water quality and or sediment monitoring on a case-by-case basis. During the public comment period, we received comments from the City of Dayton Point, the Port of San Diego, and Pyro Spectacular. Specifically, the Port and Spire Spectacular had comments on the water quality and or sediment monitoring. The Port of San Diego requests that the tentative order define the number of repeated firework events that would require water quality and or sediment monitoring. Along the same lines, Pyro Spectacular expresses concern regarding the uncertainty on which dischargers will be required to conduct water quality and or sediment monitoring, since SeaWorld was the only discharger to do so in the existing order. We want to clarify that the only change made for this was removing the discharger categories and removing explicit requirements for SeaWorld to conduct water quality and sediment monitoring, since they have reduced the number of firework shows in recent years. Under the existing order, all dischargers were susceptible to this monitoring based on factors such as receiving water body characteristics, frequency of shows, accumulative effects, estimated pollutant loading, and proximities to areas of special biological significance. In fact, these considerations are the same in the existing order and in the tentative order that is up for reissuance. It is because of all these factors that we can't exactly pinpoint an exact number of shows that would trigger the need for water quality and or sediment monitoring. We propose retaining the water quality and or sediment monitoring because it is needed to ensure that repeated firework displays in the future are not impacting beneficial uses. The tentative order continues to focus on implementing best management practices and improve reporting measures to minimize the adverse effects caused by fireworks. With that said, staff recommend the adoption of tentative order number R9-2022-0002 to regulate firework discharges. If this permit is adopted, it will be effective starting June 1st of this year. I'm now available to take any questions.
Thank you, and congratulations on a very fine report for your first time out. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Fawn?
Chair Cantu, I apologize. I could not find my unmute button earlier. I would recommend that you administer the oath for this item. And while we are at it, you can administer the oath for items 4, 5, and 6 all at the same time. Everyone on those items are here already.
Okay. Would everybody, including Ms. Fawn, who is involved in those items, please raise their right hand and report after me, repeat after me. I see some hands up. Do you all agree to say the whole truth? If you do, say I do. Unmute yourself and say I do. Okay, I did see some lips move.
I do.
Thank you very much. The oath has been administered. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Wu. Do we have any questions for Ms. Fong now that she has agreed to answer truthfully? Okay, do we have any public speakers or anybody else who wishes to speak on this item, Roger?
Chair Cantu, we do have two speakers that have raised their hands. The first we will hear from Livia Bowden.
Ms. Bowden? Welcome, Ms.
Bowden. Good morning, Chair Cantu and members of the board. My name is Livia Borak Bowden. I'm a partner at Coast Law Group and legal director for Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation, or CERF. As reflected in the permit fact sheet, CERF has been intimately involved in the board's permitting of fireworks and was part of the impetus for the board's decision to develop a general permit. For that, CERF is grateful, especially when the majority of regional water boards have ignored the impact of fireworks on receiving waters, even when they're used as drinking water sources. But it's been over a decade since the permit was first issued, and we've gained very little knowledge since then. Most dischargers submit incomplete post-event reports if they submit them at all. From CERF's on-the-ground experience after the La Jolla 4th of July event, many cleanup efforts fall short and leave debris consisting of cardboard, plastic, fuses, wires, and string behind. By design, the fireworks debris is intended to and does fall into the water. Because most shows occur at night and present safety issues, water monitoring and cleanup efforts fall short. The proposed permit does nothing to address this. The monitoring provisions and BMPs remain inadequate. The Del Mar Fairgrounds post-event report is a reflection. In their last report, the Del Mar Fairgrounds stated they had approximately 547 net pounds of fireworks. After the show, they picked up 153 pounds of dry weight. Most shows, including the Big Bay Boom, collect virtually no debris after their shows. The Big Bay Boom was 8 times as big as the Del Mar show, and they picked up 23 pounds. The rest of this debris is in the water. If the regional board is unwilling to add meaningful monitoring into the permit, we urge you to require monitoring on a case-by-case basis to assess the fate and transport of debris and chemicals. It's clear they wind up in the water, and traditional water column monitoring, especially where it's delayed, is inadequate. The monitoring plan should be designed by shouldn't be designed by the dischargers, but by the board and with public input. As reflected in the fact sheet, the data and studies to date were inconclusive, but did suggest that continuous discharge of fireworks from shows and cumulative discharges may result in long-term pollutant accumulation in sediment, and some toxicity was observed. Lastly, the decision to move SeaWorld from Category 1 to 2 and eliminating their monitoring requirements is supported by faulty data. They have not reduced the number of shows and are not moving to drone shows. They have conducted fireworks shows in 2021 from every day from March 26th to May 1st, every weekend and holiday in the summer, and on Labor Day and New Year's. For this reason, SeaWorld should remain a Category 1 discharger, and fate and transport studies should start there. Thank you for your continued leadership on this issue, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Board Member Cantu, you're on mute.
Thank you very much. So this is very interesting. I guess let's start with some concrete facts. It was our understanding, I believe, it was my understanding from the documents, that SeaWorld had substantially reduced the number of their events. But we just heard that they had a good number of events. How do we answer that, Ms. Fawn?
The tentative order talks about SeaWorld events up until 2020 when we started drafting the permit and did not include information from 2021. We did notice that they are ramping up events from 2021, but we plan to discuss whether or not water quality and or sediment monitoring will be required when they submit an application under the tentative order.
So it is our expectation that when they submit an application, we will then have them verify, and we would also know from public information how many events they have been doing and how many events they anticipate. And at that point, we can move them back to the higher category that requires more scrutiny?
Yes. The new application requires them to sort of predict how many shows they will be hosting or if they don't, if they plan to move on to other shows such as drone shows, and which is why we want to sort of keep them, we want to remove the categories as an incentive for SeaWorld to host other shows besides fireworks shows.
And what's our level of resources available to actually enforce this, to, you know, have somebody who can then after the fact research how much debris is left, you know, how many shows they actually did compared to what they had predicted, and what the impacts have been?
We'll be monitoring the number of shows more closely with this tentative order, because we will be requiring all discharges to submit an annual report that will be due each summer. So it'll allow the regional water board to closely monitor the number of shows. And although we won't be allowed, we don't have the resources to attend every fireworks shows in the region, but we do welcome emails and pictures from the public to help support whether or not the dischargers are following their BMPs and cleaning up as required. And we do have enforcement actions that we can take to help meet the requirements of the order.
Thank you. Most of those things are after the fact. So that's a little worrisome, but I understand the limitations of our resources. Any questions for Ms. Bodine or Ms. Fawn from our board? Betty Olson, Dr. Olson.
I just have one. And so it was suggested by the speaker, not by you, Ms. Fan, but by the public speaker, about the water column. So can you explain to me how that would work if people were to go, would they have to go at night to get the debris that fell in the water, or would they still be able to collect in the daytime? Does it require, I don't know, some kind of net to drag the debris up, or how would that work?
Ms. Fawn, we'll start with you, I guess.
Or anyone else who can answer. And sorry to put you on the spot.
Okay. The permit requires for a cleanup to be done within 24 hours. My colleague Keith can speak more on the monitoring requirements that are enacted.
Fireworks Best Management Plan requires them to clean up fireworks debris within 24 hours. And then there's also visual monitoring that night and the morning after to ensure that, I'm Keith Yeager, the environmental scientist with the San Diego Water Board. We also include visual monitoring. So they'll go out the following morning when there is light and they can identify fireworks debris and clean it up. I believe the Port of San Diego uses a boat where they control the water. I'm not 100% sure that will collect the debris. Maybe if the port's here, then they can speak on that.
If I can speak to that, this is Livia Bowden.
Go ahead, Ms. Bowden.
Thank you so much. And I think that's a good question. For most events, they do not do any kind of water cleanup efforts. For example, I've attended more than a handful of events at La Jolla Cove, which is the one adjacent to the ASBS. And they do not do any on-water cleanup. They only clean up at the discharge area. And then because of safety concerns, they actually wait quite a bit of time before doing the cleanup. And as you can imagine, at 10 o'clock at night, it's really hard to see anything in the water. And then the next day they come back and do a sweep. I've been there, previous regional board staff has been there a day or two after the 4th of July fireworks and found significant debris remains. And as the tide comes up, whatever hasn't been picked up on the rocks gets swept into the water. For those that are, on the water, like the Big Bay Boom, I think the discrepancy in how much debris is picked up between something like the Del Mar Fairgrounds, where they have more land, versus directly on the water and from barges, that should, you know, be indicative of how difficult it is to pick up the debris right after, especially when most events require at least a 20-minute safety time to allow people to go and start looking for the debris. The port does, in their post-event Sandy Purdon, who puts on the event at the Bay, he does provide information in his post-event report about how they do take 8 boats and crews with pool sweeps after 20 minutes, and they do sweep the area. And then after the fact, the next morning, they go to the closest shoreline to pick up debris. But because of the way that the debris falls and the type of debris, it doesn't really stay afloat for very long. I think it goes down into the water very quickly, but nobody really has ever documented how quickly that falls to the bottom or where it goes. And so the data that we do have is, you know, how much are they able to collect? And I think the discrepancy shows that it's not very effective.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Is there any way that, if we're interested, we can gain a little more information on how this debris acts in the water, if anyone knows, and discuss it more at a different time period?
Yeah, I would be willing to table this to get a little bit more information. It does seem worrisome to me that our plans to have the appropriate amount of monitoring or cleanup seem difficult to enforce and not always adhered to. Mr. Dr. Abarbanel, Henry.
I'd like to ask that we do this in the proper order. There hasn't been a motion to approve this, so having discussion, and I would like to have a time for the discussion, please.
You are correct. I'll entertain a motion.
Chair Cantu, I believe we do have other speakers on the item, and they may have a point of view or information to share on the questions that have been raised thus far.
Okay. Very good. So let's continue with our public speakers, and at the end of that, we'll continue our board discussion. Thank you.
Gary Brown.
Mr. Brown?
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Chair Cantu, members of the board, and other commenters. My name is Gary Brown. I'm General Counsel for Pyro Spectaculars Incorporated, which is the contractor for many of the fireworks displays in San Diego and California more generally. We've done that since the company's formation in 1979. I want you to know we strongly supported the adoption of this original fireworks general permit, and we support too its renewal in its current form, I think, which embodies the input of the several interested parties, including our own. I'd like to thank Ms. Bodine, I'm not sure about the pronunciation of your last name, Olivia Bodine, I believe, with Sir, for your comments. I think they're certainly relevant and certainly something that we have been interested in since the inception of this permit. I think early in the process, when we had our Category 1 participant, we took a very close look monitoring of their activities, which was certainly the most intense and ongoing, and in an area of the Bay that was probably the most vulnerable from a standpoint of depth and circulation of water. Those results are a matter of record, and I believe that they are available. I believe that they have been considered in the process of removing the Category 1 and changing it to a more flexible evaluation of the loading and the frequency of the activity in the Bay. So I think it's important to recognize that this is not our day one. This has been going on for some time. There's already a great deal of information. I know that some sampling has been done during the Big Bay boom shows as well, to try to determine how much debris is hitting the water and where it goes, what its transport looks like. And so we're not starting from, from ground zero. I don't want to miss the opportunity to express our gratitude for the work the board staff have done, especially Debbie Fenn, who's they've just done an exemplary job of allowing us to participate in the permit process, keeping us informed of its progress. We appreciate that in such difficult times that you've allowed this fireworks general permit to keep it in place in this region, and appreciate the participation of the other commenters very much.
Mr. I think Brown, it's important we're at 3 minutes now.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
You could just wrap up, please.
Sure. Just again, supporting the permit in its current form and wishing to continue to be as helpful as we can as further information is needed by the board going forward.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Brown from the board? I see Dr. Olson. And you're on mute.
Yeah, mine is similar. So you know that these items are sink faster, the water column, is that what's happening, why they're not available for pickup? Or I'm just looking for an explanation. That's what I heard was a question, so I'm asking. You said there have been some studies on it. I apologize if I...
Yeah. Let me respond if I may.
Sure.
Yeah, I think some do and some don't. There's different materials that are coming from the fireworks. They've been used in fireworks for probably centuries. Mm-hmm. More recently, the metallic parts have been added. Plastic parts were added, and those were of concern to the board and other environmental interests in the past decade, especially. And we've done our best to try to remove some of those things. There's still, it's called heavy cardboard, I guess is the way to describe it. If you think of a softball, that's about the size of some of the shells, a medium-sized shell. It's made of a very heavy-duty cardboard. Once that cardboard is saturated, it does begin to sink. How that happens varies from shell to shell, material to material, water condition to water condition. And so there's a great deal of variables, and it's all in the dark, so it's very difficult to observe. But that's, I think they're right. The materials do begin to sink. What happens to them then? It depends on the tides and the currents and a number of other variables, the activity in the water.
Testing been done on the nature of the material as it sits in the water?
I would also like to note that for the tentative order, we ask all dischargers to consider removing cardboard and aluminum shells when possible before the fireworks are set off.
Great, thank you.
Henry.
Yes, Mr. Brown, is it possible for some of the venues to have the shells land on open land instead of in the ocean and then make pickup the next day of any debris much more feasible?
It's a great idea. It's not always feasible. I believe that the city of Coronado has taken that step or is in the process of taking that step. I don't have firsthand knowledge of that, so I'm reluctant to go into depth. I think all of our shows that are traditionally on water are there because there's not a lot of alternative. The process of firing fireworks from a barge is a great deal more expensive than firing the same or similar show from land. And I hope that answers your question. It's always a goal.
No, it doesn't really quite answer my question. The Del Mar Fairgrounds has a very large swath of land to the east of it. Why should we not require them to have any debris arrive on land instead of in the waters of the state?
I don't have a knowledge of the specific plot of that that display. We can certainly look into that. I'm not even sure we do that show, to be honest with you.
I'm sorry, somebody mentioned that you did. But
yeah, it's possible.
Okay. What would it take to design a fireworks show that would still bring entertainment to the public, which I understand is the goal, and I'm for it, to have fireworks displays that allow 100% removal of the debris?
Well, it essentially requires firing the show over land or not firing the show.
Thank you.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Chair Cantu, and good morning, Henry. I believe the answer to your question, I want to confirm with staff, Roger Mitchell. We still have the waivers of waste discharge requirements for overland discharges of aerial fireworks. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And there's an enrollment process for that, Henry. So it falls to the operator to identify the appropriate location and apply for the permit that they need. Over water, it's an MPDS permit. Over land, it's the waivers of waste discharge requirements. What this permit now has is a review of the monitoring reports and the opportunity to receive information from the public, like Ms. Bedin shared with us. And one of the options is simply not to enroll them for the next year. If we see that there's inadequate housekeeping, for example, cleaning up afterwards, that is one of the options. If there are problematic aspects of the location having to do, for example, with wildlife impacts, that can be identified. The other option, again, is for us not to reissue the enrollment. It's not a rubber stamp enrollment, in other words. I hope that this helps address your questions and some of those of the board, but I do believe we still have other speakers lined up who may share more information on this for your consideration.
Dave, how often have we disenrolled someone?
We have not yet disenrolled someone, but one of the enrollments that we did allow last year was countermanded by the Coastal Commission in the city of San Diego. And that was under the old permit. The new permit now has that information and that trigger that the old one did not have.
Thank you.
Let's proceed with our other public speakers. Who is next, Mr. Mitchell?
Yes, Chair Cantu, we have one other speaker, and that is Patrick McDonough.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Cantu and members of the board. This is Patrick McDonough, senior attorney for San Diego Coastkeeper. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this important matter. Coastkeeper was a leader in requesting the initial issuance of the fireworks permit and the impetus for requiring coverage for SeaWorld. I largely want to echo and support Ms. Bowden's comments. First, we obviously thank the board for issuing a permit to cover these shows when most other regional boards continue to fail to do so. However, Coastkeeper has a couple concerns. One, that the BMPs for many of these fireworks shows remain inadequate, and two, that the monitoring provisions are inadequate to assess these discharges and thus fall short of ensuring compliance. It seems the board is already interested in discussing and fleshing out a few of these details, and we encourage that robust discussion and any other required investigation to make sure that we have all the pertinent facts and data on hand. And we urge the board to require monitoring on a case-by-case basis to accurately assess the fate and transport of the debris and chemicals associated with these shows. And it's clear that they end up in the water, and that traditional water column monitoring, especially delayed monitoring because of purported safety concerns, doesn't adequately characterize the full effect of these discharges. Thus, some changes are needed to adequately protect the beneficial uses of the downstream receiving waters for these shows. Thank you for your time. And that's all from me.
Thank you. I understand we have no additional public speakers.
That's correct.
Okay, so at this point, we'll entertain a motion to support discussion of adopting this permit or whatever motion anybody would like to make.
I'd like to make a motion to deny this regulation.
Thank you. Is there a second to deny this? And I'm assuming when you say deny that that would include revision and reconsideration at a future time.
Yes, indeed. Exactly.
Is there a second? Well, I'll second the motion. And then let's hear the discussion.
Okay, I'll try to start that. I think the idea in the permit is generally pretty good, but the means of monitoring the debris, it's with no pun intended, really falls short. And that we really need to rewrite a permit, maybe along the lines of something Dave suggested. But this one has too many holes in it for my taste that continues to allow the dischargers, literally in this case, to pollute the ocean.
Doc, thank you. Dr. Olson.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question of our executive officer. It seems to me that this is an improvement from what has gone on before, or is it not in terms of having a permit process?
Thank you, Dr. Olson. There are some aspects of this which seem to be too loosey-goosey, perhaps, for the board. That is because we're trying to handle these on a case-by-case basis. There are some places, for example, SeaWorld, where they have had historically many events and may have yet more events in the future, where the monitoring in a shallow bay over with known circulation issues has been absolutely a concern. What I'd like to do to answer your question is to ask Brandy Elwin-Beals and David Barker, who work over Debbie Phan, to provide some context for your question. For example, we're not the only region in the state that has a fireworks permit. Region 2 has a fireworks permit, unless I'm mistaken. Debbie, you may even have worked on that in the past. But there are some aspects of this in terms of iterative process and management of reports and then how to deal with it. As I indicated earlier, we have not previously denied permit coverage for MPDS applicants for the fireworks permit. That certainly is an option going forward. And for the La Jolla events that we reviewed last year, there was substantial information exchange with the Sierra Club and other members of the public, the City of San Diego. Ultimately, with that permit, the way it was written, we approved it with some reservations. Given the opportunity with this permit, it would be very likely that I would have approved it this time around. So there are some case-by-case provisions which seem to be perhaps too loose or ill-defined, maybe too much iterative process for your consideration. I would hope, though, that we would have some specific recommendations if we're going to revise the order and bring it back to you at a later date. Because trying to deal with the range of events down the coast over the open ocean versus over an inland area like the Del Mar wetlands, for example, is something that is hard to write a permit for to cover all possible exigencies. So I offer that as a suggestion to guide your conversation and your deliberations on this. And if Brandy and David can offer some more information for context, how other regions have dealt with this issue and how we can deal with the solid waste issue over water. How much trash can we remove from the bay after a fireworks event in San Diego Bay? There have, for example, just again for context, been safety issues related to fireworks event that have nothing to do with the fireworks. Boat accidents, for example, of people in the water at night transiting the bay after fireworks events have tragically resulted in boat-to-boat accidents. So there is a safety issue to be considered. How much can we require of the applicants and what can we do to ensure that we're not polluting the bay unnecessarily as a result of these events is a question I think we have been struggling with this permit and as you are addressing it today. David and Brandy, do you have more information to offer that would help the board deliberate on this or address some of the concerns that have been raised?
Yes, I do. This is David Barker. I'm a supervising engineer of San Diego Water Board. Basically, from a historical context, we began regulating firework events back in 2013 because it was brought to us that it was a potential water quality issue. And we were, in fact, leaders, not only in the state, but in the entire country on regulating fireworks under an NPDES permit. I think last time I looked, I could not find a single example in another state where fireworks were regulated in a general permit such as ours. Region 2, I think within the last year up in the San Francisco Bay region, made a similar decision to regulate fireworks. And I understand they used our permit as their model for issuing the permit. I view the permit that we have as a permit that's not perfect, but it's progressing in quality and the degree of protection for water quality over time. We are kind of learning as we're going. When we first decided to regulate permits, there was very little data available that we could to give us perspective on the impacts of on water quality. We had kind of a sophisticated monitoring program for SeaWorld measuring water column and sediment chemistry data. And Keith Yeager could give you an overview of what that data showed us. It's a best management practices based permit. There are no effluent limitations just due to the complexity of regulating a discharge of waste that is fired from a device on and then fragments in the air over the water body where the pollutants are dispersed by the wind and fall in the water, et cetera. It's very difficult to monitor a discharge like that. And we have, I think the staff's mentioned, we have provisions in the permit to make decisions on a case-by-case basis for imposing monitoring requirements based on a list of factors, such as how many firework events the applicant is holding, the water body it's over, what other firework events are also occurring over the same water body, those types of considerations. Overall, my feedback to all of the questions and comments I've heard is I agree it's not a perfect permit, but it's a suitable permit based on what we know now and where we are in our progress on acquiring knowledge on how to regulate the discharge.
Thank you.
Mr. Yeager, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I can speak on the monitoring reports. So we've been finding that most parameters are below water quality objectives in the receiving water. So they're meeting the water, receiving water limits for the parameters. And something that's interesting is that we do see sometimes that there were higher concentrations when there were lower amounts of shows. So it's kind of inverse of what we would expect to see. And the sediment monitoring, we do see some indications, but again, it doesn't appear to be causing an impact.
Thank you. Any questions from the board of either Mr. Barker or Mr. Yeager? Well, in discussion, I like the idea. I just saw you, Henry. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is to Dave and Keith. I guess, Keith, in order to understand the impact of what you said, we need to see those studies and see what was actually done. Did somebody actually go out to see, gather the materials and assess the impact on water quality? And let me make my comments to Dave as well. Dave, one thing that we can, both Daves, because this is to Dave Gibson as well as Dave Barker. You asked for other things that we could do. We could require alternative plans for the deposition of the debris over land or over the ocean and make a judgment on the basis of that, of which plan we would approve. Right now, we pretty much let the dischargers discharge and hope that the cleanup is acceptable. And another comment, Dave Barker, you commented that Region 2 followed our lead in many ways. If we make it more restrictive and more compatible with maintaining water quality, Region 2 may just follow our lead again.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm finished. I'm sorry. Thank you.
I had one question, and that was for Keith Yeager. I thought I heard you say, and perhaps I misheard, but that water quality, what we were asking for, was being met or wasn't being degraded. Is that wrong?
No, that's correct. We're not seeing an indication of long-term impacts from the discharges. The receiving water monitoring results for the water column are typically below water quality objectives.
Okay, now you did say something that was interesting, which I didn't exactly understand, and I don't know if you can elucidate it or not, but you said you sometimes saw higher amounts, and I guess that must be of some kind of contaminants, when there were fewer shows.
Yeah, so
what exactly does that mean?
So as we kind of discussed before, SeaWorld reduced their shows pretty significantly over the past few years, although they are kind of ramping up again in 2021. Some of those shows in 2020, they had one firework show, I believe. Some of the results for the water column monitoring, aluminum was highest in 2020 than it's been in the past decade. So if we're thinking that the fireworks are causing aluminum to be elevated, you would expect it to be decreased when there was less amounts of shows.
Are different colors due to different metal content and different types of metals?
Exactly.
So, forgive me, I don't know. Aluminum may be silver. I don't know what color it actually imparts. Some of them I do from pottery, but not from this. So all I want to know is, I'm going to tell you my opinion. This is an opinion, not based on facts. It's just an opinion. I would hate to see us ban fireworks. I think they are such a joy to children. And I would hope we could work forward. Now, one of the things is I do know we had an attorney from Coast Keepers, I think. We had a coastline, Miss Bodine, and we had the individual who carries out most of, I don't know, can they get together and figure out some way to provide some monies to be able to get a closer or better handle on how to approach some of these things and aid the board in their endeavors? So it seems like water quality is all right, but when I think of wetlands and debris falling on it, I don't know what the impact of that would be, but it sounds like it might not be positive. So I'm just looking for a solution so we can improve what we're doing. and allow people to go forward. So Dave, maybe you'll be able to help me out with this. Or
thank you, Betty.
Better suggestion.
I'd like to start by acknowledging Henry's suggestion, which I think is an excellent one. I believe, and Ms. Phan, please point us to the section of the permit where this is addressed, and let's see if the board can actually even see that on screen so we can evaluate if it truly meets Henry's suggestion that there is an option already or a requirement already to identify alternative location options that we could approve or that we could reject an application on because we think that they have done an inadequate job of what I would call avoidance issues. Can you point us to that page on the permit?
I will need a bit more time to find a location on a permit.
Okay.
Okay, while you're doing that, let's invite Gary Strom to ask to make his comment.
This is just a question for the staff. As I remember the lengthy discussions we had when we first approved this. in my recollection, one of the items is because the SeaWorld fireworks were so much more plentiful every night back then, I think. And it was in a very enclosed area of Mission Bay. That was our biggest concern, but it was also our biggest opportunity to do the kind of research into the questions that have been asked here, like, you know, so what are the big pollutants? Where do they go? How much of that is metal? How much is, and how could the fireworks themselves perhaps be modified to produce less, or at least less toxic waste? Has anything come of that? And that's a question for the staff.
So the monitor, this is Keith Yeager.
I figured you'd have the answer.
The monitoring showed that, majority of the time, the water qualities were met in the receiving water. And those water quality objectives are put in place to protect water quality. So if they're exceeding water quality objectives, we know there's an issue. But we're not seeing that as much in the monitoring reports.
And Gary, my recollection of the report that SeaWorld submitted, and it's a few years out of date, it's been a year since I looked at it. What they did report was that there were elevated levels of certain metals associated with fireworks like antimony. They characterized it as sediment enrichment in the bay because of all the reasons that we discussed. They did, however, in response to complaints, step up their post-events cleanups, at least for a while. I witnessed this myself because the events were fired over Fiesta Island, so they were able to go back out and collect the day after off the ground. What went into the bay, as has been characterized, often sinks within 24 hours. They had crews out in the bay and out on the island. So that's an example of a best management practice that we can perhaps pay more attention to and either base a renewal of a permit application or the rejection of a permit application on the basis of that information. I do not know that I have seen any recent data on water quality or sediment monitoring, and that is unfortunately an aspect of a very episodic, very short-term event. It's hard to get enough samples to show that limited-term impact, especially if you have to collect the samples in the dark out on the bay in the presence of navigational hazards and so on. So there's some practical limitations, I think, to what we can know about these fireworks events. It then comes down to the policy question that you have before you, which is how much is enough and what other adequate safeguards or steps should this permit include that it presently lacks. I really liked Henry's suggestion. I want to make sure that the permit we have before you fully embraces that and gives us the very clear authority to evaluate avoidance and to determine whether a better location would be the preferred option and to reject an application on the basis of a lack of avoidance. Because it's very easy to simply say it's better to do it this place than that place because it's maybe in other respects safer, but it would be perhaps a water quality issue if we're not able to recover the solid waste debris associated with the fireworks event, even if the metals are not of concern. Debbie, were you able to locate that section of the permit? And can you share the screen with us or point us to it so we can check it out ourselves in the package?
I'm on page 9 of the permit, and one of our BMPs requires for dischargers to consider alternative firing range. And we made the BMPs more stringent this time by asking all enrollees to provide examples on how they will or will not follow the BMPs. And they, if they can't, they have to provide justification on why.
Very good.
Thank you.
And I would also like to note that for this permit, we also require a monitoring report to assess, do a visual assessment within 24 hours. We try to accommodate the safety of a lot of the people who are working on the fireworks, but also to provide us information as quickly as possible.
That's good. Mr. Eric Anderson, did you have a, your hand was up?
Yeah, my comment was that what was surprising to me was that the SeaWorld monitoring actually showed that they did meet the water quality objectives back when they were more frequent. And so, although there is an impact, I think the BMPs and as the staff enforces and the BMPs or, and works with the dischargers on improving the BMPs, since there's not a lot of other permits to go on, they have to develop the best management practices kind of as they go. As long as we're meeting the water quality objectives, I think we have I think it's better to keep the permit in place and be able to and send a message to the staff and the dischargers that we want to continue with working with Libby and the coast keepers in improving the BMPs. And I don't think that really necessitates us rejecting the permit.
Thank you. Henry.
Thank you. Just a couple comments. Keith, who did the monitoring?
The consultant is Brown and Caldwell.
And they were hired by SeaWorld or City of San Diego for La Jolla or the fairgrounds and so forth?
They were hired by SeaWorld to do their receiving water monitoring.
What about the permits for La Jolla and the fairgrounds?
So the La Jolla and the fairgrounds were not required to do receiving water monitoring.
No? Okay. Secondly, in the language of section 5.2.14, it says whenever practical and feasible, and I would like to have that changed to being a requirement, not a decision on the part of the discharger, whether it's feasible or practical. And a third item is, this is really to Dave Gibson, can we require that water board staff do the monitoring and the costs of that be paid for by the discharger, who is after all benefiting from the fireworks? I agree with Betty that I don't want to stop them from doing it. I want it to be clean. And I agree that the children of the region do benefit enormously, but I'm not asking them to pay for the fireworks.
Yeah, thank you, Henry. That's an interesting suggestion. I think that it presents us both staffing and contracting issues. I do think that it is well within the board's purview, and I think reasons have been given to you today to require that monitoring as a condition of the enrollment, to describe what the monitoring will be for the board's consideration. As we indicated, we wanted to handle these on a case-by-case basis. In the instance of La Jolla, there were arguments pro and con for doing monitoring, but ultimately we did not require them in the past. We certainly could now going forward, but that cost really should be upon the discharger. We can require, we in fact do require that those reports be submitted to us under penalty of perjury and that they include metadata for quality assurance and quality control evaluation. And just to go back to the example I gave a few moments ago, that 2011 Brown and Caldwell study, I believe it was, although they reported enriched levels of antimony, for example, in sediments, they did not exceed the sediment water quality objective. But the reason we required more monitoring there was it was a disturbing trend that could get worse over time, given that it's a shallow estuary with circulation issues and a large number of events. An event one time a year over the coast, and I won't say La Jolla, but another location, for example, off Oceanside, we're not going to necessarily see that same enrichment, but we can include as a requirement of the enrollment application that they identify the monitoring that they would perform and or that we would require that they propose a monitoring plan before we enroll it. If you have some suggested language for how to make it from a request to requirement, I think would be very helpful to move it forward today. I don't have suggested language myself at this time, perhaps the staff do, but I would rather it reflect the board's intent rather than a compromise offer of our own.
Right, Dave, one of the things we can do is require that the board choose the monitoring company or whatever, and have that monitoring reported directly to the board, but paid for by the discharger. That yep. way they are working for the board, not for the discharger.
I think we're very close to that, Henry. I think that there's a legal concern I would have to ask Lori Oaken or Vincent Vu to raise in terms of dictating the manner of compliance. But can we require the monitoring report to be submitted directly to the water board under penalty of perjury with a copy to the discharger? I'm asking the attorney's heart. Sorry,
right. Henry, I totally defer to Vincent and Lori on that one.
Thank you. So the question was if the board can direct the dischargers to choose a specific company or consultant to conduct
monitoring. No. The board, my suggestion is that the board choose the company and the dischargers pay for the work. We have done that in the city of Del Mar over the years, and my personal feeling is that we get a much more comprehensive and honest report.
So typically the water boards, as Dave said, do not dictate the method of compliance with our discharge requirements. So we generally establish monitoring requirements, and the dischargers can choose how they meet those requirements. If there are insufficiencies with the reports, that is something staff can point out to the dischargers and have the deficiencies adjusted if appropriate. And the reports are submitted under penalty of perjury as well.
Vincent, I wasn't interested in the history. I was interested in the future. Can we do it?
I think that would be very difficult. I mean, based on my experience, the logistics of the water board doing it is going to be much more time consuming and difficult than, taking that time to review the monitoring report itself.
No, I'm not suggesting the water board staff do the work.
I'm addressing your recommendation that the water board staff select the consultant to do the work. In my experience, we have a finite number of consultants basically, and they do work for many, many people. And I think I would really vouch, at least for the very largest ones like Brown and Caldwell, for example, that the work that they do for one party is as the same high quality had they been selected by the water board to do that work for us. They're very attuned to their standard of performance, and they also know that they have contracts with the water boards in general and the state water board and many other people. So their quality of work, I don't think would be different if we were to hire them versus somebody else to hire them. And I think that goes for all of the major firms that work for a variety of organizations.
Well, as I said, that experience is not what was reflected in the change in procedure in the city of Del Mar. When we chose the contractor and it reported to the city planning staff or city manager typically, things did change and improve.
Yeah, thank you, Henry. That's an authority I wish that we had, but I'm pretty sure that Vincent's not being blunt enough. I don't think we can pick and choose the consultants or the contractors. The only time that that's been done is for stormwater conveyance for solid waste, where the state board went through a process to identify approved types of BMPs that could be used for track one. we face an analogous situation, for example, with wetlands certification, where we understand that there's a range of consultants who provide services to clients applying to us. We would like to be able to tell them that these are good applicants who can provide reports to us and these are not, but we don't have that authority. In this case, I think it would be appropriate for the board to look at the monitoring requirements and ascertain if you believe the current permit has adequate safeguards so that we can require a monitoring plan that would identify the contractor and then approve the MPDS permit enrollment only provided that that monitoring plan is implemented. You also identified some other language, I think, that you were thinking that could be changed. If the board's not prepared to act on this permit today or wishes to defer it, if we can please identify some key areas for us to take away, we will be happy to bring back with edits. I see that there are other hands up, but I'd like to ask if that addressed your questions or your concerns, Henry.
Not really, but I do have language for section 5.214, which I don't have in front of me, to replace whenever practical and feasible, to make it a requirement that the permit seeker identify other options and identify the reduction or in pollution associated with those options. I mean, let's be frank. If this were Lincoln, Nebraska, we wouldn't really be worried about discharging into the ocean. But we're here and the ocean's here, and I think we should be concerned about it.
Yes, thank you.
I see Ms. Bodine's hand is up. Ms. Bodine, would you, there you go.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the board again. I just wanted to sort of respond to some of the questions that have been made about the monitoring. You know, our comment was about the water column monitoring being insufficient. And I think the fact that the water column monitoring for a few events has shown there's no exceedance of water quality objectives also speaks to the fact that data is incomplete and aged, and the sediment analysis was also somewhat compromised. If I remember correctly, some of the reference samples were potentially impacted by stormwater runoff. And so that again is the impetus for requiring additional data about the fate and transport, because there has never been a model or any attempt to figure out where that debris and where those chemicals are going. We just kind of picked areas to monitor and hoped that they were reflective of the chemicals and the debris. And this is the type of information that we would like to be involved in the dialogue for when and if monitoring is required. So if there's an opportunity for the public to be involved when this, you know, potential case-by-case basis monitoring is developed, I think that might address some of the concerns of who does the monitoring, how it's developed, where it goes. If we're able to provide comments when a notice of intent to enroll in a monitoring plan is submitted, we could provide our independent analysis and maybe have our experts opine as to the sufficiency of that monitoring. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, do you anticipate that we would consider enrollment in a public session, or is that something you anticipated to do ministerially or administratively?
Thank you, Chair Cantu. That is currently a ministerial but there is absolutely the opportunity for the public to comment on the fireworks events, as I described a few moments ago. The Sierra Club commented extensively on the proposed enrollment at La Jolla. So both with respects to housekeeping and to monitoring, I believe that the opportunity exists. And if the language and the permit can be refined so that there's a required posting in advance on the website, we will certainly do our best to achieve that so that the public can know when there's an event that's in process and be able to know where to go to review the report. I believe that those would be required to be uploaded to CWIX, which is probably the easiest way for the public to access those documents, given the fact that we are constrained by the ADA Act in terms of what we can actually post on our website. Some documents can't be remediated. It's better if they go to the documents submitted by the discharger under penalty of perjury on the database management system itself. But I think that there is an opportunity, and I want to make sure that the staff can confirm that there is a notice opportunity and a comment opportunity before I take a ministerial action on a pending enrollment. David, perhaps you can make sure of that or point us to where that's in the permit.
Yeah, actually, Dave, there are some provisions in the permit to allow posting of these documents. Debbie, could you point out the how the permit has provisions for posting of applications for coverage under the permit?
As of the way the tentative order is written right now, we don't have a way of like posting the application before we issue the notice of applicability. So the public would have access to the records when everything is available on CWICS or through a Public Records Act request.
Debbie, was there a provision in there that dealt with the discharger posting information on a website or something like that?
Yes, a new addition to the permit is that all dischargers are required to make their fireworks best management practices plan available to the public to anyone who requests for it. So that's one way the public has access to see what cleanup operations are in place.
So we would expect the public to anticipate who might be having a fireworks event and then going to their website to find the best management practices. Is that what that would entail?
The public can find who's enrolled through CWICS, and then they could contact the discharger to see if it's posted on their website or requested by email.
Okay, that's quite a burden. And I could see how it could be done. We need to act on our motion at hand. It seems to me that this permit is written in a way that it's flexible and iterative, which it needs to be, because I am quite concerned about discharges over wetlands and the San Diego Bay, which had, you know, limited flushing as opposed to the ocean. So we have crafted a permit here that is able to be applied in a variety of circumstances. And I think in many of those circumstances, the coverage and the protections are necessary. Where I remain concerned, which is not unique to this situation, is do we have the staff sources available to us to be able to apply the individualized attention at each one of the specialized circumstances when the time actually comes? And I'm not convinced we do. I don't think we have the dedicated staff. And when I say dedicated, I mean like budget line item dedicated, not in terms of whether or not staff is dedicated, because clearly they are, to be able to apply the discretion necessary at the time in each case.
I have an additional question for either Ms. Fahn or Dave Gibson. The language, as we saw it, says whenever practical and feasible. Where else in our permit process do we give the discretion to decide what's practical and feasible to the discharger?
Typically, we require for the BMPs to all be considered.
About all of our permits, not just this one.
I think that would be a question best answered by either David Barker or Dave Gibson.
I'm trying to think of a specific example of permits that bring in practicality and feasibility. I would say that we do have some permits with that type of language that are best management practices based permits, shipyards, boat yards, situations where numeric effluent limits are not feasible and controlling the pollutant discharges gets down to certain, as I say, best management practices to prevent the discharge.
That's another possibility on the water board choosing the consultant is that we could have a list of approved consultants from which the discharger could choose. We don't have to do it on every case. And while I appreciate your confidence in some of the consultants, I don't share that confidence absolutely. And I would want us to have at least reviewed them. It deeply concerns me that the consultant reports to the discharger and not to the water board. It's not the discharger's responsibility to maintain water quality, it is ours.
Okay, is there any further discussion? I'll ask the clerk to
I just wanted to address a point which I'm not entirely sure has been adequately covered. How does the public know when there's a pending enrollment and know to comment on it? Right. We've talked about posting it on our website. I actually think that's rather inelegant in itself, because we are right now faced with a number of constraints in terms of what types of documents we can post there and that they be machine readable. This is an unfortunate reality of law and that we're struggling to deal with. But one option, it seems to me, while I do not want to make more work for staff, would be to have at least a quarterly report in the executive officer's report identifying pending enrollments and identifying a target date for comments to be received on those. We can then enter into an iterative process with direct contact with our staff to provide the documents to the requesters so they can see the monitoring report, they can see the application itself. That doesn't require us to post it on the web, but allows us to be as transparent as we can. They can refer to the documents in CWICs where they need to, but this would at least give Livia, for example, an opportunity to know what's pending before us without having to call Keith or Debbie specifically to ask, and everyone else would be able to know. I'd like to know if that would address some of the concerns that several board members have raised about how do we interact with the dischargers on monitoring or on housekeeping and ensure that we can exercise the authority that you've delegated to me on ministerial actions for permit enrollments. That's one. I think two, I think Henry's suggestion in terms of permit language makes very good sense. And I wanna make sure that council can confirm that change would be lawful and enforceable if we were to entertain that in a motion today. Vincent, did you recall the language specifically, or would you like Henry to repeat it to you to make sure that we could actually act upon that today?
If the specific language could be repeated so I could just write it down.
This is a dangerous move, Vincent, because I'm not a lawyer, okay? I'm suggesting that we replace the language. Again, I only know it in section 5.2.1.4 that Debbie showed to us. It says, whenever practical and feasible, such and such, basically that there be options. And my suggestion, and I leave it to you to craft the specific language, is to require that specific options be presented by the discharger, including the plans to, the way I wrote it here is for plans for debris deposition and cleanup. That isn't maybe specific enough or legal enough, but that's the kind of goal that I have in mind. And thank you for the law degree. I will promise not to use it.
I'm just looking at the permit, and the way I understand it, you're asking that a requirement be included in the permit for the dischargers to submit a plan regarding the elimination or reduction of
plan for where the debris will be deposited and how it will be cleaned up. Somebody brought up the wetlands in the case of the Del Mar Fairgrounds as the only deposition point, and that is not correct.
That is something that staff and I can consider and figure out how best to craft that language.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you're not asking me to do it.
Yeah. Chair Cantu,
I believe I said that the wetlands receive debris. I didn't mean to imply that it was the only place that received debris.
When the wetlands are raised, I don't want the debris to go there either, but there are alternatives.
If I could, I'd like to just make a slight comment on the issue about where the fireworks are deposited. The permit requires the discharger to identify the firing range, and that is the kind of the area that the discharger estimates the fireworks will fragment over a water body. So that's all built into the application process. And the requirement board member Arbonnell is referring to is just a requirement that the discharger consider alternatives to that firing range to minimize discharges to surface waters. And myself looking at it, I don't see any issue with deleting whenever practicable and feasible and just having a straight requirement there. I think the requirement is in the list of things a discharger has to include in their best management practices document when they submit the application. And so all of we could look at all of that in deciding whether to allow coverage under the permit.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Madam Chair, we have a motion.
I would submit a substitute motion then, if one can substitute a motion for one's own motion, which is that we—
Well, you can withdraw your motion and yes. I will second that if that's okay. Your desire.
Okay, that would be fine. I do. And so I want to substitute a motion that says that we put this, is it technically correct to say we put it on the table for future consideration after the staff can work with the public on the aspects that have been raised by the board discussion? That's a motion.
Is there a second to that motion? I think that motion has failed. I'll entertain another motion. The motion failed through a lack of second. I'll entertain a motion regarding item number four, the permit reissuance for fireworks pollutions. Mr. Anderson.
Okay. I will move acceptance of the staff recommendation with the change on 5.2.1.4 suggested by Dave Gibson, where we just simply remove where practical and feasible.
Thank you, Board Member Anderson.
I believe that was actually Henry Barbanel who made that suggestion, but from the staff perspective, I think it's a useful change that the board should contemplate in this action.
I think Dave gave to word it. And I think that worked for me for the proceeding. All right.
I'll second that. This is Gary.
Can I get a confirmation on the section change?
2.1.4, I believe is the right one. I'm not sure. I was just quoting Henry on that one. And it was the part wherever practical and feasible.
Yes, that language is in section 5.2 of the permit, the best management practices section. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I couldn't really hear Eric. Could the motion be repeated?
Will the clerk please repeat the motion?
Mr. Anderson made a motion to adopt the permit with the section to change section 5.2.1.4 to remove the words practicable and feasible.
Okay. Is the motion open to discussion?
It's been seconded and we'll open discussion now.
Okay. I'm going to vote against this motion because I don't think it goes far enough. I don't think it addresses the monitoring issue. which is critical in this regard, as identified by members of the public, Ms. Bodine in particular. There was another speaker. I really apologize. I didn't write down the names quite fast enough. I would really like to send this back for significant reworking to protect the public and water quality, and to do so in a way that is as satisfactory to us as we do in the other circumstances which come before the board.
Are there any other comments on the motion before us?
Could somebody please read the section that we're referencing with the words removed as proposed by Mr. Anderson?
Yes, Dave Barker, I think you might be the best to do that. Could you pull that up? Or Ms. Fahn?
Yes, I could also share my screen to show the section where it's available at.
Please.
This is on page 9 of the permit. Section 5.2.14 reads, whenever practical and feasible, the discharger shall design the firing range or consider alternate firing range to eliminate or reduce residual firework pollutant discharges to waters of the United States.
Thank you.
If I may say, now that I have the opportunity to scrutinize the various other sections where it says when practical and feasible, I am not comfortable with that either. It leaves the responsibility in the hands of the discharger, and we don't do that. If we did, we wouldn't get anything done.
Is it not the water board staff discretion to agree or disagree if something is practicable or feasible? Isn't that within our purview?
But this is the message to the discharger that they can decide whether it's practical and feasible. And instead of saying you should do this, the same as we do in other cases, this seems, I believe Dave Gibson used the word loosey-goosey. I don't know about the goose part, but it's definitely too loose, in my opinion.
Keith Yeager had his hand up, and I have an additional question. It's my understanding that it is the water board staff's final decision whether or not something is practicable or feasible. So that is within our control. Is that correct?
I believe that that is correct, Chair. And Henry, I understand exactly what you're speaking about, and I think I sympathize and agree. I would suggest that one way to look at that language where it identifies we're practicable and feasible is that we can't specify the manner of compliance. I think we can, however, in the section that you originally cited, require that they identify alternative locations for discharge that would present less of a water quality, for example, over land rather than over water. I think that that's actually a very useful change to make to the permit, but I don't know that.
That would be a very good step. And if that were the motion, then I'll think about it, but I could probably support it.
And I would agree with Chair Cantu that, you know, the discharger has the prerogative to identify what they believe is practicable and feasible. This is in fact a feature of stormwater permits. It's a feature of 401 permit applications, and the water board staff do have the ability to review that information in context with comments, for example, from the public, and make a determination in a denial of permit enrollment that it is, they have not in fact met that proof of the being practicable and feasible. They can then take action on that if they disagree with our decision and petition that failure to enroll, I believe, to you or to the state board. I don't think we need to get into that in too great a detail, but I'll leave it to the council to guide me through that conversation. But I do believe that the option exists for the board to evaluate that information that has been presented to it on the basis of the discharger or their consultant's judgment or prerogative or desired outcome and evaluate it more critically. You asked a question about staffing. There is always indeed a staffing issue when it comes to these types of permits. And so that is an acknowledgement that we simply have to make. And I just wanted to clarify too, that whereas I suggested that the EO report would be one venue, we also do have an email list, a LIRIS list, in which people can enroll. And so we can send out updates on that as they come in. So as an application comes in, it can be simply posted to that list. And then perhaps on a quarterly basis or so, we can simply refresh that with an EO report listing of the pending enrollments. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I didn't mean to interrupt the motioning process, but I wanted to provide that clarification.
Idea. The LIRIS is a great idea. I think that's a very good idea.
Do we have the right to, in newspapers of record, to post these announcements?
We do not normally. Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Henry. I don't believe we ever we post these notices ourselves, but we can require the applicant to post that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they do that as a matter of course, and that I don't know if they charge. I hope they don't.
They do.
They do.
Oh, okay.
That's a big profit center area.
Okay. Thank you. I'm just concerned that the public, if we ask them to go to our website, or we ask them to be on this mailing list, they may not be on the mailing list. They might not know how to go to the website, but they still might be concerned.
It's very easy to get on the mailing list. And I think that's, I love that idea. There's no expense to it. It's pushed, it comes to your email inbox, and it's there for you to read, delivered at your screen. Mm-hmm. So
how do we deal with people who don't have email access or internet access?
You know, there are very few people who do not have at least a phone. The number of people who have internet access has really gone skyrocket in the last 5 years.
I think that's an environmental justice issue, and we ought to just avoid it by making the announcements as public as possible.
I agree with that, Henry. And we can provide both of the EO reports and periodic public updates, our staff contact information. All of our phone numbers, for example, are available. So you don't have to have a phone or an email address, rather, to contact us. You can actually do that. And we had a great deal of interaction on the La Jolla. So there are some ways for us to surmount that. I agree with that.
I'm not denying the effort that this water board, the other regional boards, and the state board make to do all of that. This is something that directly affects people who may live on the bay or on the ocean, who do not know that their waters are being polluted.
I think it's time to call for the question. Would the clerk please read back the question again?
Thank you.
I mean, the motion, excuse me.
Right.
Okay, the motion on the table currently is to change section 5.2.1.4 to remove the words whenever practicable and feasible.
That is the motion before us.
Not to substitute any other words?
No.
Okay.
Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Mr. Barbanel?
No.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Yes.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
And Chair Cantu?
Aye. Motion carried. Let's take a break until, I'm sorry, Ms. Oakens, do you have a comment?
Yeah, the way the clerk read back the motion, it was just to change the words, not to adopt the permit. So I think you need another vote.
Okay, very good.
So the motion would be to adopt the permit with the change that was just approved.
I'm sorry, I was only reading the part that of the section to be changed. It was to adopt the permit with that change.
That was the motion
yes.
that Mr. Anderson read and was seconded. Do we need to revote, do you think, in an abundance of caution?
I think it would be a good idea. Extra 30 seconds.
Yeah. I'll entertain a motion to approve the permit as amended.
Again, I have the question. So we remove the words whenever practical and feasible and substitute no other words?
Can we that is the motion.
Can we see the wording that would then
lose, Nina.
The Ms. Pham, can you show us the wording that would then be there in the in what we're voting on?
Yes, so the wording would be just the portion that I highlight. The discharger shall design the firing range or consider alternative firing ranges to eliminate or reduce residual firework pollutant discharges to waters of the United States.
So, Mr. Vu, does that require the discharger to do it?
Henry, this section is part of the fireworks best management practices plan. So the discharger would be required to submit a best management practices plan in which, with the amendment that the board approved, in which the discharger shall design the firing range or consider alternative firing ranges to eliminate or reduce residual firework pollutant discharges to waters in the United States.
And Henry, could I further suggest that the word consider be replaced with the word identify alternative firing ranges? Because I believe that spoke to your earlier concern of having an actual alternative for us to evaluate.
How about evaluate instead of consider?
Entirely your prerogative.
Well, I don't know what the motion is anymore, but if we put evaluate in there, then the discharger is required to do it. To consider it, they can say, we considered it and decided not to do it.
That was precisely my concern, speaking to your earlier request that we know what the alternatives were and be able to evaluate them. I think that that would be a useful amendment. And so the language would now be 5.2.1.4, the discharger shall design the firing range. And I think it should be and evaluate alternative firing ranges to eliminate or reduce residual pollutant discharges to waters of the United States.
All right. If that's acceptable to is it Eric who actually made the motion? Then I'm comfortable with that.
Is there a motion to that effect that would enhance our already adopted motion of removing whenever practicable and feasible?
I make a substitute motion that adopts the wording that I see.
And I support that wording change.
Thank you.
Is there a second? Is that a second, Mr. Anderson?
Yes.
Chair, if I could just clarify what the motion is. So the current motion before the board that was raised by Henry and seconded by Board Member Anderson is to amend section 5.2.1.4 of the permit to state that the discharger shall design the firing range and evaluate alternative firing ranges to eliminate or reduce residual firework pollutant discharges to waters of the United States, and would recommend that there also be a motion to approve the permit with that amendment.
I think I made that motion, but I'll make it again if that would be helpful.
Go ahead.
Okay, I move to approve the R9-2022-0002 with the change of wording in section 5.2.14 as indicated on the screen in front of us.
And Mr. Anderson, your second still stands?
Yes, second.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Barbanel?
Aye.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Yes.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Chair Cantu?
Aye. Motion carries. We'll take a short break at this point and we'll come back at 11:15. Thank you very much. Morning.
Madam Chair, we are recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. I see almost everybody is back. We have a quorum, so let's proceed. Our next agenda item is the NPDES permit reissuance for waste discharge requirements for the Padre Dam Municipal Water District, Ray Stoyer Water Recycling Facility, and discharge to Sycamore Creek, San Diego County. Let's proceed. Fasayo, I think you're up.
Yes, thank you, Chair Cantu. Fasayo Oshibodu will be giving the presentation on this item and the item that follows it, which is the time schedule order for Padre Dam, also that accompanies this. You can have one motion to vote on both of them together or vote on them separately, but both actions have to be completed today. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chair, if we can just ask people to state if they've taken the oath before they present.
Absolutely. Mr. Oshibodu, have you taken the oath?
Yes, I have taken the oath.
And other presenters, Keith, will you be presenting? Keith Yeager?
I'll be available to respond to comments.
And you have taken the oath?
I have taken the oath.
Thank you. Let's proceed.
Can everyone see my screen? Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Cantu and members of the board. My name is Fasayo Oshibodu, and I'm an engineer with the Source Control Regulation Unit. I'll be presenting to you today on items 5 and 6 of your agenda. San Diego Water Board staff Brandy Atwin-Beals, David Barker, and Keith Yeager will also be available to answer questions on these items. Item 5 is tentative order number R9-2022-0003, which if adopted will reissue the NPDES permit for Padre Dam Municipal Water District, Ray Stoyer Water Recycling Facility for a 5-year term. While item 6 is a tentative time schedule order, which requires Padre Dam to comply with the requirements in order number R9-2022-0003, the permit being presented to you. Padre Dam owns and operates the Ray Stoyer facility, which is shown on the map by the gold star. Below the gold star is a red circle, and within the circle shows the location of Santee Lakes, and also shown on the map are the 52 and the 67 freeways for reference. Here's a simplified flow diagram of the Ray Stoyer facility. The Ray Stoyer facility treats wastewater from residences, commercial establishments, and industrial establishments within the cities of Santee and El Cajon, and also the community of Lakeside. Padre Dam takes a maximum of 2 million gallons per day from the city of San Diego's sewage collection system, with the remaining sewage in the system going to the Point Loma wastewater treatment plant. The Ray Stoyer facility uses primary, secondary, and tertiary treatment processes and produces tertiary treated recycled water, which is used primarily for landscape irrigation at reuse sites in the cities within the cities of Santee and El Cajon. Reuse of recycled water for landscape irrigation and other non-potable uses is regulated under separate waste discharge requirements. On the screen is a satellite map showing the location of the Ray Stoyer facility, Santee Lakes, and the receiving waters. Tertiary treated wastewater that's not recycled is dechlorinated, then discharged to a holding pond, pond C on the map, and then goes through 7 lakes, numbered 7 through 1 at the Santee Lakes Park. And lake number 1, the final lake, overflows into Sycamore Creek. As you can see on the map, Sycamore Creek is the tributary of the San Diego River, and the San Diego River is shown by the blue line from going from west to east. As I mentioned earlier, tertiary treated effluent from the Ray Stoyer facility that isn't sent to reuse sites is sent to Santee Lakes. Santee Lakes is the popular recreational vehicle park and is used by the public for recreational activities such as boating and fishing. Now I'll briefly describe the beneficial uses of the receiving waters. The basin plan designates the following beneficial uses for Sycamore Creek, which are listed on the slide. And these include contact water recreation, non-contact water recreation, warm freshwater habitat, and wildlife habitat. The basin plan also designates beneficial uses for groundwater within the Santee hydrologic area. And these uses are municipal and domestic supply, industrial service supply, industrial process supply, and agricultural supply. Although the NPDES permit regulates the discharge of treated wastewater to surface waters, beneficial uses of groundwater are also considered in establishing effluent limitations for the tentative order due to the potential for surface water to interact with groundwater. Like I mentioned earlier, Sycamore Creek is a tributary of the lower San Diego River. Sycamore Creek is not on the 303D list. However, the lower San Diego River is on the 303D list and listed as impaired for the constituents or parameters listed on the slide. This means water quality objectives are not being met in the lower San Diego River for these parameters. A TMDL, or total maximum daily load, has been developed for bacteria, which establishes the waste load allocation for Padre Dam's discharge to Sycamore Creek. The requirements of the bacteria TMDL have been incorporated into the tentative order. TMDLs have not been established for the other 303D listed parameters, with the exception of benzene. Have not been established for the other 203D listed parameters. With the exception of banded communities, tentative order includes effluent limitations for all the parameters listed on the slide based on applicable water quality objectives. Now I'll briefly go through the effluent limitations and monitoring requirements of the tentative order, which are key requirements in the order, and also some of the significant differences between the tentative order and the existing 2015 order. The tentative order establishes effluent limitations which are intended to protect water quality and beneficial uses of Sycamore Creek, as well as beneficial uses and water quality of groundwater within the Santee hydrologic area. Effluent limitations are also established to protect health of recreational uses of Santee lakes. Effluent limitations established in the tentative order include technology-based effluent limitations for removal of conventional pollutants such as BOD, TSS, oil and grease, and pH. The tentative order also establishes effluent limitations for turbidity and total coliform bacteria based on state Title 22 standards for tertiary treated recycled water. And the tentative order also establishes water quality-based effluent limitations for parameters such as nutrients, indicator bacteria, priority toxic pollutants, and other parameters with basin plan water quality objectives. There are some significant changes between the tentative order and the existing 2015 order. During development of the tentative order, a reasonable potential analysis was conducted for priority pollutants with water quality criteria, and also for parameters with surface or groundwater quality objectives specified in the basin plan. Effluent limits were established for parameters that were deemed to have reasonable potential to cause an exceedance of a water quality criterion. A parameter was deemed to have reasonable potential if the highest effluent or receiving water concentration for the pollutant during the permit term exceeded the lowest water quality criterion for that pollutant. Based on the results of the reasonable potential analysis, new effluent limitations were established for selenium, cadmium, zinc, MTBE, and mercury. The selenium, cadmium, and zinc effluent limitations are derived from US EPA California toxic fuel criteria, while the MTBE effluent limitations are based on the basin plan groundwater quality objective for MTBE, which is set at the secondary MCL for MTBE in drinking water, secondary maximum contaminant level for MTBE in drinking water. The tentative order also establishes new interim and final effluent limitations for mercury. The interim effluent limitations for mercury are based on US EPA California toxic fuel mercury criteria, while the most stringent final effluent limitations for mercury are based on the state board mercury provisions, which were adopted in 2017. Based on review of effluent data, Padre Dam may not be able to achieve compliance with the final mercury effluent limitations based on the state board mercury provisions. As a result, the tentative order includes the compliance schedule for Padre Dam to design and construct facilities or implement measures needed to comply with these final effluent limitations for mercury. The last two significant changes The tentative order also includes new effluent and receiving water limitations, or enterococci, based on the state board bacteria provisions. And the tentative order includes new effluent limitations and monitoring requirements for chronic toxicity based on the state board toxicity provisions. A key component of the tentative order is the monitoring and reporting program. The tentative order includes a question-driven monitoring and reporting program, which is consistent with the San Diego Water Board's practical vision and also consistent with the San Diego Water Board monitoring framework. The monitoring and reporting requirements are needed to evaluate compliance with the tentative order and also ensure protection of the quality and beneficial uses of the receiving waters. Most of the monitoring requirements in the existing order have been retained with some minor changes. The monitoring requirements include effluent monitoring to assess performance of secondary treatment processes, effluent monitoring to determine compliance with effluent limitations, help identify operational problems, and provide information that can be used in conducting analyses for subsequent orders. The tentative order also includes receiving water monitoring to measure the effects of the discharge on water quality in Sycamore Creek and the San Diego River. The tentative order includes benthic monitoring to evaluate the impacts of the discharge on the benthic community in the San Diego River, and includes fish tissue monitoring to monitor potential human health effects from the discharge. The tentative order was noticed and released for public comment for a minimum of 30 days. During the public comment period, written comments were received from Padre Dam, Enthalpy Analytical, and from Genodamet. Most of the comments received were minor. Changes meant to the tentative order as a result of the comments received are shown in your response to comments document, which is supporting document number 7 of your agenda package for item 5. However, I'll go through the two significant comments we received during the comment period, and both significant comments were received from Padre Dam. To go through the first significant comment, Padre Dam requested that the proposed effluent limitations for zinc should be revised, and the zinc limitations and the existing permit should be retained. Padre Dam mentioned that the proposed limits are based on a series of worst case conditions, which are not reflective of actual discharge conditions. Padre Dam also mentioned that it would only be able to meet the proposed zinc limitations about 70% of the time, and it would need to install reverse osmosis treatment to achieve consistent compliance with the zinc limitations. Staff's response to this comment is the zinc limitations were appropriately calculated using procedures established in state policy. And the value of the effluent limitations is based on the quotient of variation of the effluent data set, which is calculated by dividing the mean by the standard deviation. As a result, we have very limited flexibility on the value of effluent limitations because the limitations are derived from existing effluent data. To address Padre Dam's inability to achieve immediate compliance with the proposed zinc effluent limitations, staff developed a tentative time schedule order, or TSO, with interim effluent limitations for zinc. The tentative TSO has been considered as item 6 on your agenda today. The tentative TSO includes a schedule with due dates for Padre Dam to design and construct facilities or implement control measures needed to comply with the final effluent limitations for zinc in the order. Padre Dam is currently constructing a new water recycling facility and also constructing a new advanced water purification facility as part of its East County Advanced Water Purification Program. Upon completion of the new facilities, product water from the new advanced water purification facility will be used to augment Lake Jennings and will also be discharged to Santee Lakes. These new facilities are expected to remove zinc and enable Padre Dam achieve compliance with the tentative TSO and final effluent limitations for zinc. Now to move on to the second significant comment from Padre Dam. Padre Dam requested to remove the point of compliance for measuring compliance with MCB effluent limits from the end of the treatment process. And that monitoring location is denoted as EFF001A. The PyroDAM requested remove the point of compliance for measuring compliance with the MCV limits from EF001A, the end of the treatment plant, to EFF001B, the discharge point from Lake Number One to Sycamore Creek. Historically, MCV results have been higher at EFF001A, and data shows Pottery Dam would only have been able to achieve compliance with the MCV limits about 60% of the time. In response to this comment, we are retaining the compliance point at EFF001A to ensure protection of the municipal and domestic supply beneficial use of groundwater in the event of seepage from Santee Lakes or in the event Sycamore Creek interacts with groundwater. The tentative TSO, which I mentioned earlier, includes definite limitations for MTB and a schedule with a series of due dates for Pottery Dam to design facilities and also construct facilities or implement measures needed to comply with final effluent limitations for MTB. The due dates established in the tentative TSO are the same for zinc and MTB, and Pottery Dam plans to comply with both effluent limitations for zinc and MTB by constructing new treatment facilities. Similar to the tentative order, the tentative TSO was released for public review and comment for a minimum of 30 days. The only public comments we received on the tentative TSO were from Pottery Dam. Pottery Dam is currently constructing new facilities for its East County Advanced Water Purification Program and plans to use those new facilities to comply with the requirements of the tentative TSO. Pottery Dam submitted a comment letter proposing modifications to due dates in the tentative TSO, and these proposed modifications were to accommodate for any delays in delivery of materials and equipment that might be caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Pottery Dam also submitted further revisions to the compliance schedule in the tentative TSO by email. Staff found the requested modifications to the compliance schedule due dates to be reasonable, and staff has also provided errata sheets for both the tentative order and the tentative TSO to revise the last two dates in the compliance schedules in both the tentative order and the tentative TSO. These revisions will make the schedules in both orders consistent and also limit their duration to 5 years. In conclusion, staff worked collaboratively with Pottery Dam during and after release of the tentative order and tentative TSO and made efforts to address concerns raised by Pottery Dam. Staff believes the requirements of the tentative order and the tentative TSO are reasonable and will help protect beneficial uses and water quality of Sycamore Creek and also help protect recreational use of Santee Lakes. Staff recommends adoption of the tentative order and the tentative TSO, both with errata. That concludes my presentation, and at this time, I'll be available to answer questions board members may have.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the board? Mr. Strong.
Yes, I'll have some more comments maybe later, but the one question I had here is on their request to move the testing site to the actual discharge site as opposed to coming from the plant. I understand your reasoning, but I'm not sure I agree with it. I don't think there's, first off, I'll preface this. This is an area I'm real familiar with. I test it every month the last 15 years. And it's definitely been a benefit to the San Diego River overall. Now, I can't get down and test the zinc to the levels you had, and I think this is a good move overall. But the idea that we can't test at the discharge thing because there might be some leak above that, I don't think that's realistic, knowing the area and itself. So I'll just throw that out for now. But generally speaking, I'm glad you were able to work with them cooperatively and get something to go forward, because in general, this is a good thing for the community and for the river and the waters of the state. Their tertiary treatment and reuse program, as well as their discharge into the river in the wintertime.
Thank you. Dr. Olson.
Yes, I just had a question. So they are not able to meet, they do not comply at the discharge point, but they comply after the water has gone through these different lakes or rivers. So what is happening to the delta in terms of the contaminant? Is it going to sediment? Well, what's happening to it? Is it being taken up by biological tissue? I mean, because they're having some kind of cleaning process or something.
So that's a good question, Dr. Olson. It could be a number of things. It could be just the water, the contaminant being diluted. It could be, I know we know MCB is volatile, so it could also be volatilizing from being exposed to air. So it could be a number of things that could be happening. We're not exactly sure, but those are potential. We do know that it's historically been higher at the end of the treatment plant, as opposed to further downstream before the discharge to the lakes. But we're not actually sure why, but it could be dilution or volatilization. Those are possible explanations. Yeah.
So why would we accept dilution as a solution here?
So we're not necessarily accepting that. We're requiring them to develop
fix
new
the
facilities.
Problem
exactly,
and you're giving them extra time because they're putting in a new plant
exactly
that will fix the problem. Am I correct so far?
Exactly. They do believe that the new plant is going to be designed to meet drinking water standards. Mm-hmm. So they do believe that would be able to solve the problem. Yeah.
Is this something that the regional board does often? In other words, we say, well, while you upgrade your plant, we're going to measure at this point instead of this point. Is that common procedure or?
So, I think other staff might be more qualified to answer that question. But in this case, it's kind of a unique case because Pottery Dam was already proposing this project, the Advanced Water Treatment Project. So it just so happens that would actually deal with this issue as well. So it was a project that was already in the works even before we were planning to reissue the order. So, but it just so happens that would also address the MTD zinc and mercury issue.
Well, I think I think their new plant is excellent. This is an interim, but I don't know where this constituent is going, and that's my question. All right.
Ms. Outwin-Beals, do you want to speak to that?
I'm happy to provide additional answers to Betty's original questions about whether or not this is an unusual circumstance. And it is, but this is an unusual design for a wastewater treatment plant as well, with the lakes involved. So most of our plants would only have one discharge location, where here we've historically looked at two. On this internal point from the pond into the lakes, because Pottery Dam has explained to us that that's the point at which they have control over the quality of the water. And then there's the discharge from the lakes into Sycamore Creek, where we have had to move a couple of constituents to that location because they have been shown to be fine within the lakes for the uses of the lakes, but there is a benefit, a cleaning mechanism for the nutrients through the lakes into Sycamore Creek. So there have been a couple of things that we've moved from the lakes to Sycamore Creek, but by and large, Pottery Dam usually wants that internal point just at the end of their treatment system. So this is just an unusual circumstance. No, we don't ordinarily look for a different monitoring point to help a discharger comply. We're just looking at how the lakes are being used and then what the impact would be onto Sycamore Creek. So in terms of the keeping the one location at the pond to the lake rather than the lake to Sycamore Creek is because that it was staff's recommendation to leave it at that location because we feel it's the most protective location for the underlying groundwater in this case. But certainly if the board felt otherwise, we can move the location. So we were just recommending the most protective location for that particular constituent. So hopefully that's a whole answer for both of those comments, but if you want any further discussion, of course, I'm happy to provide that.
I think you went on mute there, Betty.
Keep from making noises. So there are no other groundwater can't exchange with the lake water in any of the upper ponds or lakes. Is that what you're saying? Or maybe someone else can explain.
Dave,
Gibson. Chair Cantu, I think that Padre Dam is present today and they could talk to the board about the ponds. I believe that they're clay lined and there shouldn't be too much transfer between the ponds and groundwater, but they would be the ones best positioned to explain that. I just also wanted to share for context, the time schedule order that you're considering provides Padre Dam with both the opportunity to address the treatment system. They were already planning a pure water project that will help address this, but also the sources. MTBE, for example, has been discontinued as a fuel additive for quite some time. It is still used in some industrial processes like agrochemicals, pharmaceuticals, and cosmetics. And the sewer shed in El Cajon includes industrial facilities. Don't know if they make those products or not. But hopefully Padre Dam will be investigating sources as well as just addressing the treatment. And that would be true for zinc as well. Do we have someone from Padre Dam here, Saya, who can address Dr. Olson's question?
I do not see anyone on the Zoom call. There is actually someone just logged in. I think that's Mark.
We have Mark, a few. Please. We have two people.
Yeah.
Good. Let's start with Mark. You were first to show up. Nemiak?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. I can hear you.
All right. It worked. It was a little strange on my side. I've been in a lot of Zoom meetings and I had no control over here, so I felt powerless. Yeah, good morning, Chair Cantu and board members. My name is Mark Nemec. I'm the director of AWP at Padre Dam. To address Dr. Olson's comment about the ponds, yes, the ponds are isolated from the creek. And as it relates to MTBE itself, Padre Dam is part, or you know, our service area is subject to the City of San Diego's Industrial Waste Control Program as part of the entire metro sewer system. And that source control, they operate that source control program in the City of San Diego for the entire metro system. And that program meets and or exceeds the existing state and federal requirements. All the participating agencies to the metro system, including Padre Dam, we have what are called interjurisdictional pretreatment agreements with them. And that requires us to collaborate and assist them, meaning the city, with administration and enforcement of the industrial waste control program. Now, we do coordinate with the City of San Diego, their IWCP group, to regulate sewer discharges from the industry and groundwater sites, and to investigate instances of any non-compliance or illegal discharge. There are no regulated sources of MTBE that currently exist. And existing regulated groundwater discharges have to meet all the applicable standards. Again, we will be coordinating. To date, there are no unregulated discharges to Padre Dam that we found, but we will be coordinating with the Industrial Waste Control Program on the next level of investigation, which is going to include sewer collection system monitoring to determine where possibly which trunk sewers might contain the MTB, and these may be near groundwater remediation sites where they've had old, where there's been previous contamination. And we'll be looking for those areas in the sewer shed where potentially they could have been, they can't, the MTB is introduced into the sewer system. And so we're going to continue to work with the Industrial Waste Control Program. We're going to coordinate and collaborate with the Regional Quality Control Board staff to address this issue.
So the ponds are lined, is that correct?
Yeah, we have a statement that says that the ponds are lined.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. Answers my question.
Did Mr. Chavelle-Sen wish to comment, or is that no longer needed?
Good morning. I think Mark covered, no longer needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And accuse, I mean, I'm please, my apologies for adding a Mr. and I should have had a Ms. Any other comments from the board before we go to public questions? Hearing none, do we have anybody else in the public who wishes to address us?
Board Chair Cantu, I do not see any hands raised to address the board.
Very good. I think we can move on then. I'm concerned with the MTBE. I just can't imagine where that's coming from. Dave talked about industrial processes. I mean, that was something we thought we put behind us some time ago. And I'm very happy to hear that the ponds are lined. I mean, most ponds leak no matter how well they're lined, but we have to be worried about MTBE and groundwater at all times. So that's worrisome to me. So I'm happy that the monitoring point is at 1A. And I really hope we can find the source of that and the zinc as well. If there are no other questions or presentations, I'll entertain a motion to adopt both the MPDS reissuance and the time schedule order that goes with it.
I would like to make that motion. It's Gary Strong.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Dr. Olson. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Mr. Barbanel?
Aye.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Yes.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strong?
Aye.
Chair Cantu?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Our next agenda item number 7 is election of the 2022 Regional Board Chair and Vice Chair, and I'll turn it over to our Executive Officer Gibson for this process.
Thank you, Chair Cantu. As I'm sure you all know, at the first meeting of each year, the regularly scheduled meeting, the board is required to identify a chair and a vice chair. So this is the opportunity for the board to entertain its leadership for the coming year.
I see Ms. Olson's hand. Dr. Olson?
Yes, I'd like to nominate for chair, Celeste Cantu. She's done an excellent job, particularly with the issues that we've had with the Board of Treatment Plant this year. And so I nominate her.
I can call it. No, this is almost over.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Blair. And I think you're supposed to be conducting this, Dave. So you should do it. You should call for the second also, and whatever.
Very, very well then. Since we have a motion and a second, I'll ask the board to vote on this matter, on this motion. Chris, can you please call the roll?
Mr. Barbanel? Henry?
I don't see him on our participants list. We may have lost him. Let's come back to him.
Okay. Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Yes.
Did we get Henry back? No. Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
And can't ask Chair Cantu to vote on her own nomination. So we have 4 ayes. That means the motion carries.
And that then also presents us the opportunity to entertain a motion for the vice chair to fill in for the chair at meetings or to conduct this meeting as necessary in her absence. Is there a
motion? I would like to nominate Dr. Betty Olson. I've really enjoyed working with her. She is very available to me when I need to talk to her and is very dedicated to this board. And I would enjoy the privilege of being the chair for the next year and having the opportunity to continue to work with Dr. Olson in that capacity. So I nominate Dr. Olson.
I second the nomination of Dr. Olson as vice chair.
Sorry, I'm having Zoom problems. If we have a motion in a second, Chris, can you please call the roll?
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
And Chair Cantu?
Aye. Thank you.
Four votes. Congratulations, Chair Cantu and Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you. It is a privilege.
Thank you for your support.
Our last agenda item is board members' requests for future agenda items. Do we have any such requests today? Mr. Strawn. I'm afraid you're on mute.
There we go. Okay. I've been doing a lot more river cleanups here in the last 6 months or so. And I guess it's twofold. One, I'm heartened by the amount of work and the amount of trash that gets hauled out of the river by the volunteers and the cooperation of at least two of the cities along the way. But it's still just a horrible problem. I know there's a lot of work being done by the San Diego River Park Foundation and what they're doing, particularly with the city of San Diego. And I would just like to request that at some point in the relatively near future, maybe when we have a meeting back here in San Diego, that we have the River Park Foundation, perhaps the River Conservancy, and some others come in and give us a little information item on just some of the progress and the problems. As you know, the overall headcount of people living houseless along the river is just blown up on us since COVID. But there are a lot of efforts going on, and some of them are showing some real signs of promise. So I'd like to have an information item from them on that, maybe sometime early summer.
Very happy to invite them both, as we did last year. Hopefully this time the meeting times will work out for both the Conservancy and the Foundation to come together at the same time.
Yeah. Thank you.
That sounds good. This is the time of year that we routinely set up a committee to review our executive officer, which is a joy for us to be able to do annually. And I'd like to request our Vice Chair, Betty, to head up that review process, if you would. And if there's somebody you would like to work with, it's always good to have two. I worked with Eric in the past. It was a lot of fun and a pure joy. But you can pick whoever is available to work with you in our annual executive officers review. There are some guidelines that are new, which we will make sure you have.
Just for clarification, last year we used a form. Will that new form be supplied? Is that?
Yes, I don't know if these new guidelines change that form at all, but we will make sure you have that, whatever is appropriate at this point.
All right, well, I can ask now. So I'll ask, since you recommended Eric, I'll ask Eric Anderson if he's not too busy. I know he's had a lot of experience over the years. So Thank you very much.
Great. Now we will move into closed session. We have several items that we wish to discuss. And Mr. Vu, if you would like to detail those, and we will see you back in a Teams meeting. We will come back to this venue at the end of our closed sessions to announce any actions we may have taken. Mr. Gibson.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair Cantu. I just wanted to advise staff that I have added several of you to that appointment to provide any information the board may request during that closed session. The usual rules apply. Please look at that appointment. And I wanted to confirm with the board members that they do in fact have that Teams appointment and can join us there shortly. Please let me know if you need any technical assistance.
Could I ask that you email the Teams again? Sorry.
Yeah, I just did a moment ago. You should have.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you very much.
And let's just take a 5-minute kind of stretch break as we move into Teams. Thank you very much. Sure.
I think Vincent needs to say something first, though.
Yes, of course.
I'd just like to announce that the board will be meeting in closed session today to discuss items 9, I, J, and K on the agenda. These are the cases involving the border issues with the United States International Boundary Water Commission. And so we'll meet on Teams. And if so, the board members and anyone else could log off of the Zoom meeting and join us on Teams.
Chair Cantu, do you have an idea of when we might be back?
Maybe Mr. Vu would best be the one to answer that.
I'd say maybe about an hour. So we can discuss the closed session items.
Perhaps we could text, or someone could text the secretary of the board just prior to the time where we reconvene.
Yes, please.
Okay, that's fine. I'll be happy to do that.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye.
Good idea. See you on the other side. Thank you. Welcome back. We have completed our closed session. Attorney Vincent Vu will report out.
Thank you, Chair. The board met in closed session to discuss existing litigation. And as I mentioned earlier, this involved items 19I, J, and K on the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. We will be adjourned as our agenda is completed, and we will meet next month in person in Laguna.
No, thank you. Mission Viejo.
Mission Viejo.
Oh, Mission Viejo. Oh, Mission Viejo. Okay.
Don't go to Laguna.
Orange County. Let's just say Orange County. We look forward to seeing you then.
Bye. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.